Your Money Briefing. Money and Market Stories from the Wall Street Journal.
I'm J.R. Whalen in New York. Sanctions on a Russian aluminum-producing company are setting off alarm bells at some of the U.S.'s biggest corporations. We'll have details in a moment. First, these money headlines. U.S. oil prices broke through the $70 mark on Monday for the first time since 2014, reflecting both increased geopolitical risks and a healthier backdrop as the industry works off what had been a persistent supply glut. Oil prices have risen more than 10% in the past month, as President Trump has indicated it's likely the U.S. will withdraw from a 2015 international agreement with Iran that eased sanctions in return for curbs to its nuclear program. The unemployment rate's 17-year low in the U.S. is not expected to translate to an easier time for teens to find summer jobs this year. The staffing firm Challenger Gray & Christmas estimates teen summer employment will remain stagnant over last year. And a report from Drexel University backs up that data and makes the point that many of the lower-paying jobs in the retail and hospitality sectors that used to be filled by teenagers are now held by foreign-born adults and older workers, including those past retirement age. The report says part of the reason for the shift is those workers are viewed as having more appealing behavioral traits and social skills, such as being able to show up for work on time, or having years of experience interacting with customers. And Chris Evert, the world's former top-ranked female tennis player, is listing her Florida home for a shade under $5 million. The 63-year-old Evert bought the Mediterranean-style home in Boca Raton, Florida for $2.8 million in 2003 with her now ex-husband, Olympic skier Andy Mill, and raised her three children there. The house comes with a pool and, of course, a tennis court. This is your Money Briefing from the Wall Street Journal. Welcome back, everyone. U.S. sanctions on a large Russian aluminum producer have sent shockwaves through industries that use the metal in large quantities. And Wall Street Journal reporter Amrith Ramkumar joins us to explain the impact. So, Amrith, last year, Russia supplied about 12% of all aluminum demand in the U.S., mainly through the company that was sanctioned. That is a substantial amount.
Yeah, absolutely. And the key thing here is it's not just in the U.S. If we look globally, aluminum supply is dominated by China. But the company you mentioned, United Co-Russell, they supply, analysts estimate, about 13% of all production outside of China. So in Europe, in the U.S., like you're saying, this is a huge chunk of global supplies. And when they were announced on April 6th, the biggest thing is that they caught a lot of people off guard. So with U.S. tariffs, for example, on steel and aluminum, that was something that had been batted around for a while. And so when they were announced, there wasn't as sharp of a reaction. But when this happened, the market was really thrown into chaos. And talking to everyone from traders, investors, the companies that use this stuff, everyone is still really reeling from it and kind of the fallout because the U.S. reversed course about 2 weeks later. So people are still really on edge. And this has been going on for about a month now.
And this disrupted operations at big corporations like Boeing and Ford and Caterpillar, the resulting higher prices in aluminum, some cases the prices are at six-year highs, they're actually being seen as a headwind against earnings.
Absolutely, yeah. And you mentioned the biggest companies, but others, including Whirlpool and Harley-Davidson, they're really struggling because they don't really know where prices are going next. So you mentioned that 6.5-year high for aluminum was at about $2,700 a metric ton, and it rose about 35% in 2 weeks. So if you think about that— Yes, in less than 2 weeks. So as if that's one of your core input costs, then you probably have to hedge against a further rise, and you have to really take steps. And so what this really does for a lot of these companies is it adds uncertainty given, like we mentioned before, the trade tensions with China and this broader kind of protectionist trade policies. They don't really know how aggressive they can be in, for example, spending when they're not sure what their input costs are going to be. So it really is, when listening to some of these earnings call, pretty striking how kind of cautious a lot of these companies are having to be.
And some of these aluminum deliveries have actually made it to the U.S. You point out in your story in the Wall Street Journal that there are deliveries from the company sitting unopened in ports like Baltimore and Houston, and people are afraid to go up and touch them because they may be in violation of the sanctions.
Right. And that's the biggest thing, is the uncertainty. So the sanctions on April 6th basically set an early June deadline for all investors to exit their dealings with this company, Russell. But then less than 2 weeks later, the U.S. extends that deadline to October and kind of laid out a path through which Russell could basically escape the sanctions and not be blacklisted. But the issue there is that path involves the sanctioned owner, majority owner, Oleg Deripaska, basically agreeing to sell. And so there are basically all these reports that he didn't want to sell, and then he eventually did agree to sell. But there are very few clear buyers, so traders and, like you mentioned, anyone who uses this stuff is very kind of hesitant because they don't want to be in violation. And I think another important point is that European companies, as soon as the sanctions were put into place, basically forced the U.S. to kind of walk back its position because they complained that Russell metal is so vital to their operations. Like I mentioned at the start, I mean, there are just very few large suppliers outside of China. So it really has rippled through like global industries.
And I think aluminum is used in more products than people know. And,
right.
You know, and that's more than just aluminum that's being affected here by this political strife. Steel prices have also spiked.
Yeah, steel and then nickel and palladium. I mean, Russell is a big part of Norilsk Nickel, a huge producer of nickel and palladium. Palladium's in basically catalytic converters that scrub emissions in diesel engines. And aluminum, you mentioned, widely used from everything from jet engines, beer cans, same thing with nickel. So this is really having a profound effect on all metals markets and, again, the companies that use them. So people are really on edge. I mean, Friday there were reports that Russell's April exports were down 70% year over year. So even though aluminum had fallen back down after hitting those 6.5-year highs because people thought, you know, there will be a path for Russell to escape sanctions, people aren't really sure and aren't really touching the metal in a lot of cases. So we'll definitely have to see how it plays out in the coming weeks.
And just walk down the street at any building or storefront and you see steel everywhere.
Right, yeah, and people were already reeling from the start of the year when these tariffs on steel and aluminum were announced. I think, like you're saying, there was more of an effect on steel given the duties, but some people are kind of concerned. You know, short term, there are these domestic price spikes for steel and aluminum and some of these other metals, but long term, they think the end result might be slower global economies, then that translates to slower commodity consumption. And so in the end, for a lot of these producers, they think the short term might be positive, but longer term, because of all this uncertainty, we might end up in a worse place for some of them.
All right. Well, a good reason to keep your eyes on reports coming from the commodities desk here at the Wall Street Journal. That's reporter Amrith Ramkumar joining us. Amrith, thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And that's your Money Briefing. I'm J.R. Whalen in New York for the Wall Street Journal.